Roll the tape.
This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Welcome to a Sunday edition of Correct Weight. Warren Huntley in the chair, Dino Lester having a well-earned break. I think he's continuing his tour of music festivals around Australia this weekend. I'll be joined by Matty Stewart and Trent Massenhelder shortly as we look back on the feature Saturday meeting at Pakenham. Pakenham Cup Day, successful day it was for the club also, but Group 1 racing in Western Australia with the Kingston Town Classic. And look, a star had already been born, Trent Massenhelder, but Arcadia Queen put a real exclamation point on the back of that star status yesterday.
Yep, she was the highlight of the day, no doubt about it. She is very, very exciting, and hopefully we get to see her east. Some interesting comments from Bob Peters, the Leviathan owner, post-race, which we'll play a little bit later.
And Matty Stewart, you had so many things on the agenda yesterday. It was going to range from all points of the compass. How did the day pan out?
There was always an odds-on favourite, though, wasn't there? And that was the couch. And that's exactly where I landed for the day. And it was a great day. Pakenham was... sometimes it's better to watch a race meeting from the couch to get a really good look at it. And no real hard luck stories. They use most of the track, and it's something that I reckon we don't tend to see at our bigger tracks. And it was a really good point of difference. But as Trent said, you know, this is the it horse, Arcadia Queen. This is the one we've been waiting for. As long as she can take it on the road, you know, if you take it on face value, you know, when they're talking about Golden Eagles and All-Star Miles and all this sort of stuff, and Winx, is there something over her shoulder now and all that? Well, what more do you need to do to the Trap for Fools and all these sort of horses to lay your claim? So amazing. And even the stablemate is a star in her own right, and she was absolutely beaten senseless. So amazing stuff. And there was an interesting big winner across the Dutch as well. So maybe the next big wave of good horses, some of them are out of sight in the West and across the Dutch.
We'll talk a lot more about racing in Western Australia, and in particular Arcadia Queen, after 9 o'clock. The Queenslanders, the New Zealanders, were to the fore with Craig Phelan and our big Mike rolling along in the Pakenham Cup, and Jai McNeil had the reins.
Two lengths in front of Pilo Desai, Del Harold, then Runaway, next in the field, New Mia, then came Tally Kawaya, under the bat, still about third last, followed by Khartoum and Lord Fandango. Our big Mike at the 300 metres looks to lead all of the way, still three lengths in front of Tally back on the inside, then Berisha, Del Harold is grinding home. Our big Mike at the 150 getting weary, still two lengths, Berisha and Tally. Our big Mike is going to lead all of the way. This has been a big win. Our big Mike has won the Pakenham Cup. Two lengths, Berisha. Del Harold third. Khartoum fourth from Tally.
Well rated. It was talked up as one of the better Pakenham Cups in recent times, with some strong form lines holding on through the Spring Carnival. And Jai was able to roll along on our big Mike and take the race in dominant fashion. He joins us this morning. Congratulations and well done, Jai.
Thanks, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Oh, always a pleasure, and always a pleasure, I suppose, for you to be talking to us on a Sunday morning, because it means something good has happened on a Saturday. Take us through, first of all, the situation that got you aboard Big Mike for the Cup.
Yeah, so as it's been noted, Noel had a fall at Sandown that looked pretty nasty. I think, thankfully, he is okay, but unable to fulfil his engagement in yesterday's Pakenham Cup, and therefore, I picked up the ride on Thursday.
He looks like a reasonably uncomplicated horse, but when you pick up the ride in a feature race at short notice, how do you go about preparing for it? What sort of background research do you do?
I was lucky enough that Sean, who is Craig's son, he was able to send me a few replays, and I got to know the horse by watching them. And look, his pattern is pretty simple. He is a front runner, and yeah, everything went to plan yesterday.
It was a race full of front runners, though, Jai. I think all our speed maps were kind of screwed up a little bit because we had Pilot Desai and Del Harold and Runaway, and I think everyone had our big mic somewhere there, but it was pretty clear-cut early what you were able to achieve, wasn't it?
Yeah, I agree, Matt. I was a little bit worried with the amount of speed that did appear on paper, but I was very positive from the gates in knowing that, and I think that was one of the parts that won him the race.
And how did you feel turning for home? Because your horse just looked to be travelling, and there was a few off the bit a long way out, and you just sort of cruised into the top of the straight, and looked like there was plenty of juice left in the tank, and he really found the line well.
Yeah, Connections told me pre-race that he can sustain a really good gallop, and they wanted me to put the pressure on early and not leave anything in the tank. And it is a long way up that Pakenham straight when you do kick a few lengths clear at that stage.
Hey, just something I mentioned earlier about packing them in the wide open spaces and how the fields tend to spread out. It wasn't a case because they're all in your rearview mirror in the cup on our big mic, but just generally, it just seems like such a refreshing shift out of town for this big meeting on such a spacious track where there seem to be limited hard luck stories.
Yeah, I agree. It was a terrific day of racing yesterday. I think there was plenty of people there. The track was in great condition and, it was a great day.
When you're trying to establish yourself as a senior rider, how important do you think it is to be able to show your versatility and roll along on a front runner or, produce the ducking and weaving rides? Is it important to build that artillery of rides that you can display you're capable of producing?
Yeah, it's a big asset to be able to, be able to achieve everything. And, I like to think that majority of the time I can get it right. And thankfully I did yesterday.
Jai, how do you see, your career and development progressing? You're 24 now. You had a really good apprenticeship. You've picked up some good rides for Weary over the spring. You've developed a good association with Anthony Friedman. How do you feel your career is tracking?
Yeah, I feel as though I'm achieving a lot of my goals at the moment, and I'm building up quite a good support base. And I come close to winning a Group 1 up in Sydney in the Metropolitan early in the spring this year. So I'm hoping that, next year or maybe a little bit further down the track that I can keep achieving my goals.
Trent mentioned that you're 24. It's actually a special day in terms of you actually turning 24 today, if my information's right. Are we to wish you a happy birthday today?
Yeah, correct, Warren. Thank you. I'll be halfway to 50 next year.
That's a good way of looking
at it. Pointing out exactly the demographic that Warren and I are in. Are you at Werribee today?
I am at Werribee today. I've got a couple of nice rides, including Master Zephyr in the Werribee Cup.
Looks like a good ride. What did you make of his most recent performance? Perhaps a glimmer of hope there?
Yeah, I think he's been running well. You know that he's gonna be able to sustain the 2,000 metre gallop, and he's drawn a nice barrier in four. So we'll see how we go.
What's the feeling about going to Werribee? It's been under the hammer lately for various reasons, and the cup itself has been a sort of an up and down sort of thing in the last 15 or 20 years. Going back to race at Werribee, I guess a lot of people are wondering how things are going to play out down there.
Yeah, I've raced at Werribee quite a bit over my career, and I actually don't think I've had a Werribee Cup ride yet, so it'll be interesting to see how the day turns out. But yeah, I don't have a problem with Werribee at all.
You've got a strong hand right throughout the day, small fields throughout the day. I think a number of your horses are going to be either favoured or very close to it. You kick off with Medicine Ball in a modest maiden over 2,000 metres, only a field of four there. What are your thoughts?
Blinkers are coming off today, just over a race, a little bit last start in them. Drawn the one, which in a field of four is a little bit tricky, but hopefully I can begin well, get into a similar role as I did on our Big Mike yesterday, and Medicine Ball can get the job done.
Creative Harmony is also one of your, what appears on paper, strong rides, heading to Werribee to have its first run for the Galagotis camp, and you trialled him at Cranbourne recently. What sort of a feel did he give you?
Yeah, I've trialled him twice at Cranbourne, and he gives me the feeling of a stayer, hence why Peter has opted for the 1,400 metres first up. I think that he'll be fit enough for this assignment today, and drawn a good barrier in one.
There in races one and three. In race four, you're on Run Pam Run. How fast is Pam going to run today?
Hopefully very fast, Warren, yeah. I think it's quite a competitive little race. Obviously the top weight is going to be hard to beat. We've drawn five or seven, but I'm hopeful that she can run well as well.
We talked about Master Zephyr in the Cup. Sokomo's been scratched by Anthony Friedman. You've got Siege Warfare for Robbie Lang in the last. What are your thoughts on him?
I don't know a lot about him yet. I obviously just picking him up this morning. I haven't had a chance to have a look at his form yet, but I will get that done before I go into the races. But he's drawn a good barrier in three over the 1,100 metres there. It shouldn't be an issue to be in a good position, and and hopefully be hitting the line.
That's a strong hand right throughout the day, Jai. We'll just take a break shortly and have a look at your price in the Jockeys Challenge. But importantly, thanks for joining us and congratulations on a terrific day yesterday.
Thanks, Warren. Thanks for having me.
Matty, I think a really valid point Jai made there, when he was told to be positive on our Big Mike. And with other speed in the race, he was the one who didn't blink, and he was able to talk about that. Yesterday morning you were talking about who's the one who's going to blink, and Jai just maintained that tenacity.
Yeah, exactly. Dal Harold had a half an intent and then was happy to forfeit it as soon as our Big Mike came across. What surprised me was that he was able to get the lead so clearly when we all knew that there were three others that were going to have a dip at it, and then how they all just fell into line behind. I mean, Trent, I reckon even as far out as the 1,000 or the 800, there was nothing else that could win the race other than the leader.
Yeah, I was surprised as well. I thought, okay, maybe he finds the lead like that, but I would have thought Stevie Baxter might have, you know, gone up and eyeballed him on Runaway. We know how positive he is, particularly on Waterhouse Bot horses, but, I mean, Runaway has put up with an issue, so maybe he was feeling it a little bit, you know, out. Pillow Desai and Dal Harold's put up with an issue as well, so maybe circumstances just allowed him to get that soft lead, but it was a very positive, proactive ride, and ultimately won him the race, and good on him. I really am a fan of Jai McNeil. He's just very level-headed. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Still a bit underrated for mine, but it doesn't seem to faze him. He just goes about his business, and I reckon he's a really good, honest rider.
We found his doppelganger too, haven't we?
We have, yeah.
There's a Hollywood sort of comedy actor called Michael Cera, who was in Juno and a few others, and he looks exactly like Jai McNeil. Probably got a slightly more flamboyant personality than Jai, but
He's not as good on front runners either.
No. Just Michael Cera cannot ride a front running cup winner. Just one thing that's hard to assess, I reckon, a little bit, Warren, is on going into the race when you had a Geelong Cup winner in Runaway, you had a previous Ballarat and Pakenham Cup winner in Pilote Desai, and, you know, on face value, the form was strong. But I reckon, and Kawaya had come through and won the Ballarat Cup. I'm not sure they ran to form, and I'm not sure exactly how to measure the winner now, because I don't think they all turned up on the day.
I agree, and Kawhi's pulled up with a degree of heat stress. It wasn't that hot at Pakenham yesterday, but it was quite humid, so there were conditions that were going to just make it a little bit stressful on some horses, and some had coped better with others. We said on paper it was strong because it held all those form lines together, but the reality is we are at the end of the spring, so that preparation's going to take its toll on some horses, and I think we saw that with perhaps Dal Harold and even early stages. I think Runaway, the intent was to go forward. I just don't think he had enough petrol in the tank to be able to get there and put pressure on, because we know Gay and Adrian Bott horses don't mind doing that. They can work early and then get a bit of a breather, but was just trapped a little bit wide and didn't seem able to make that ground to get up there.
He might have left it on the track on Melbourne Cup.
I was just going to say, not many horses really go on from a Melbourne Cup, maybe to the Sandown Cup or the Zipping Classic, but they don't usually come through deep into a preparation and continue on, although he's probably had a little freshen up. But yeah, interesting to note, you mentioned it wasn't that hot there. Looking through the stewards' report, there's quite a number of horses that pulled up with heat stress, so maybe it was heavy air, muggy.
It is the humidity. Humidity there,
which is uncommon for Victoria, so maybe when it does come, it sort of knocks them about a bit. Certainly did my good self.
And Matty, you mentioned that probably the turn into the home straight, you didn't want to be on any other horse. I suppose for Dino, Berisha did give a glimmer of hope and got out in chasing, but Mike was able to just maintain that gallop.
Yeah, exactly. And even things like Tally, who came in with a recent win. I mean, yet again, we saw that it doesn't run a really strong 2,500 Tally. And poor old Fandang, he never recovered from, basically back to the strangles, which set back the whole team. And he was always a run behind. And then he showed a glimmer of getting back to form. And I think it was a Benalla Cup or one of those. And so he's had an out campaign
total
as well.
Total forgive prep for him, isn't it? Just put a line through the whole preparation. Let Archie go and work on him over the break, and let's see what he can do in the autumn, I reckon.
Yep. At the start of the preparation,
or even miss the autumn. Maybe
have a good break. Yep.
Archie made a point that he might be able to recover with the sprinters that are going to just have short course runs, etc. But when you're having that type of interruption at the start of a stayer's preparation, it's certainly going to have some sort of impact, and I think we've seen that throughout the spring.
Is there something loitering around for our Big Mike now? Is there another race to go to, or is that it?
We've got any cups left? I'm trying to think, because and it was an interesting point, actually. I want to find this. Brad Taylor made an interesting point from the Freedman Sailor, who is a New Zealander. Big Mike's win in the $300,000 listed Pakenham Cup today, as he tweeted yesterday, should be evidence to Kiwi trainers that can be competitive here at the right time of year. Pakenham Cup worth $100,000 more than the Group 1 at Trentham. That's remarkable.
Well, and Chris Phelan said something, sorry, Craig Phelan, is it? Said something after the race about how he wasn't even thinking about it, but his wife and his son are both jumps jockeys, and they said, Dad, get across there, there's 300 grand. And even Peter Berry from America, who, you know, maybe he's been a, and he tweeted something through yesterday and said, what, 300 grand for a Pakenham Cup? And so what people have to realise is that things have changed and the prize money opportunities and our horses, the ones that we produce here aren't capable of winning these races. So if you want to have a dip, you know. So so would he go, Warren, would he nearly go back across to New Zealand now for the summer festival?
Well, that's possible. And obviously, if you hang around here in Australia and you head slightly south, you can go to Tassie for some feature cups coming up, albeit in a month or two. And a lot of the horses that we've mentioned are at the end of the prep, and that's not going to happen. And heading over to Perth for New Year's Day is probably a bit of a bridge too far for a horse from Western Australia. He just might not know where he is if he gets that far away from
him. I wonder whether he's even, you know, when you've got a calendar and it only, you don't know. I wonder whether he's even noticed the cups in Tasmania, because they would seem to be, when you think about it, the most logical way to go.
It's a really good summer carnival. I've spent the last couple of summers down in Tassie, and it's a tremendous carnival. They do it well down there. I reckon he'd have a ball. It was interesting to see his post-race interview on racing.com yesterday, Craig Phelan. I think it was Brent Zarafa who might have interviewed him, and he looked pretty emotional. He's, you know, for us, he's just won a Pakenham Cup, but he could barely get the words out yesterday. I think he's a man of few words but he looked to be really...
But you said it, 300 grand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, and he said, you know, this is pretty big for me, so good on him.
Yeah, and they've got a horse that can make his own luck, ride along and be very strong, and they can have some more fun with him. Horses like that can win a lot of races, and maybe he can head back to New Zealand or even go south to Tassie. That was a terrific edition of the Pakenham Cup. Jai McNeil to the fore and picking up the ride, fortunately at the expense of Noel Callow. We're wishing Noel a speedy recovery. Jai was the beneficiary yesterday.
This podcast is brought to you by rsn.net.au.
Star Fall under its own steam by a length, Miss Scorcher, followed by All In Brawl third. The inside Poise just needs an element of luck from Divine Mr. Tycoon, the outside with another bet, followed by Dark Pool Symphonette with a bit to do, but Star Fall under a hold at the moment, comes down towards the 200 metres, two lengths in front of Divine Mr. Tycoon, Miss Scorcher, another bit and Symphonette. Star Fall with 100 metres to go is going well, over a length and a half in front, it's all Star Fall. Star Fall did it well from Divine Mr. Tycoon up for third, possibly Symphonette from Miss Scorcher, another bet.
Well, Trent, he'd had his runs at 1,200 and 1,400 metres, and that might have been the query going into yesterday whether Star Fall was sharp enough for 1,000 metres. He trialled well at Cranbourne, and Linda Meach, in what's been a customary role for her, just controlled the race.
Gee, she's good, isn't she? When you back a Linda Meach horse and she finds the front and doesn't have to use a lot of petrol, you're just so confident in the run. They just really relax for her and really run for her. Our good mate Carl DiOrio, former member of the show now at racing.com, put out an interesting nerdy tweet that Carl's very good at yesterday. 31 of Linda's 65 winners this season have led throughout. That's 47.7%, while 50 of 65 have settled top three, 77%. So that's where she's obviously comfortable. She's very good wherever she rides, but she's obviously very much in her comfort zone there.
And that's a point that Pat Carey made to me yesterday. I watched a race and said something like, you know, gee, she's very good on front runners. And Pat said, she's good wherever she is.
She's just good.
But it's a nerdy but interesting tweet, that one from Carl, and I reckon... I remember talking to Tony McAvoy about Jamie Carr and how with a lot of the top female riders, the horses seem to be going a little bit too quick, but they are just comfortable underneath the rider, more so than being restrained by the guys. And I reckon you'll find that most of the really successful... Caitlin Mellion was a great front-running jockey.
Steph Thornton.
Steph Thornton's a great front-running jockey. Linda Meach predominantly is a great on-pace front-running jockey. And I reckon the horses, if you talk to McAvoy and these guys, Warren, they'll tell you that horses run for the girls more naturally than they do for a lot of the guys, and that invariably means that they're going to be up on the speed. So I think there's a little something in that tweet, you know, from the geek Carl.
Well, she got control of this race aboard Star Fall, although he's a bit awkwardly away, but then mustered very quickly to get control of the race. And then with that control, it looked like horses like Symphonette was left with a bit too much to do. And All In Brawl, Trent, he looked a little bit uncomfortable back nearer the inside. He wasn't ever travelling like a winner. He was an easing horse in the market, although he was well supported in early betting. What did you make of his run?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. He sort of got his head up and over-raced a little bit, so maybe a little bit of an excuse and resuming there. So he might come on from that run. You mentioned Symphonette. He closed off well. He just got too far back, and the winner got the soft run up in front, but he closed off well and will be better. Divine Mr. Tycoon stuck on well, I thought. But, Starfall, another Zoo Star. Geez, isn't he absolutely flying as a sire at the moment?
I think you're being a bit kind on all in Brawl. He bit kind. Horrid.
Yeah. Well, I didn't back him, so I'm probably a bit more forgiving than
well,
you.
Geez, you're a forgiving soul. I'd like to have you on side. He was another example. The betting moves, some of the moves were very telling yesterday. He was out the gate and he ran like a dromedary, I thought. So, and the money came for Symphonette. So there's a big switcheroo in the market and it ran a race to justify it, whereas All in Brawl, the drift told the story in a way, didn't it?
I think Philip Stakes is going to, obviously, makes his presence felt when he's been targeting Victoria on hit-and-run missions. Now with that base at Pakenham, he's going to have more of a presence, and I think she ran well. She's probably just now looking for a bit further than the 1,000 metres, Matty.
I reckon, absolutely. And I think what you'll find with when you look at individual track stats in when we look back in 18 months' time, I think you'll find that Philip Stokes' stats at Pakenham will be through the roof.
Yeah, I agree. What did you make of how the track played yesterday? Matty obviously referenced how they can fan wide, and that's a good thing, but I thought the track was great. I didn't think there was any bias. I just think most of the winners, and I haven't gone back and gone through the tape, but most of the winners sort of settled in the front half. Maybe those that were really at the back found it hard to get home and win, but it was probably more pace-related.
I think it was as much tempo-related as anything else. We saw horses win across the track. Good to see even late in the day horses staying near the inside. On the turf track at racing.com Park Pakenham, we quite often see horses getting right off the track, but we saw Starfall dominate from the front early. We saw The Answer, My Friend, late. And we saw Credence was going to make some ground down the middle of the track and then did a dipsy doodle but he was making ground down the middle of the track. But you're right, a lot of the horses were in that striking position in a sweet spot, so to speak. But I think the track played beautifully. Yeah. Mike Hodge and Charlie Stebbings and the team there would be wrapped with the way the track held up yesterday.
I reckon there was a hint, because you know when it's lightning swoopers there, it's just obvious. It wasn't that. So if there was a hint of a pattern, it was certainly more on the slightly on-pace side. But the thing that I liked about it is that they could win on the fence and off the fence on the speed. It wasn't like they were all hugging the rail to get there. And that's why I think there was limited interference and that they seem to be using a fair bit of the track compared to... I always find it really frustrating at Flemington when you got these 18, 20 horse fields in the spring and then you look at the head-on and they're only using a width of about 5 horses of the track. It just seems quite strange to me, but they just refused to get out wider. They were a little bit more inclined to do it yesterday, but having said that, they weren't swooping from well back and winning, were they?
And no, they weren't. Although, in a solidly what looked like a reasonably run race, or Lormy In was coming from off the speed and won the second. So even after two races, and we'll get to the second race shortly, we'd seen the variability in the way races could shape up. The winner of the first, though, Starfall, he's building a good record, and the fact that he's won this race at 1,000 metres first up might just be a bonus for him. The Kieran Maher and Dave Eustace stable have got a nice horse here, and the former Andy's first preparation trend held up well.
Yeah, absolutely. Former around Ocean Knight, and even before he went out for a break, he was beaten by Good and Fast, who you'd think would give these a bit of a spanking. He's been racing in higher grade than that, and he was only beaten 2.5 over the 1,400 at Flemington, so you'd think he's going to get out in trip, and yeah, he's got a good future, I would have thought.
Well, one thing about the Maher Eustace is that they need the new year as a new beginning, because they had an indifferent sort of spring, the big venture, and they just didn't hit their straps for whatever reason over the spring, and I reckon they're one of those stables that'll look at 2009 and go, okay, we need a good summer springboard and let's get that brand out there.
Yeah,
and
they put a horse like Merchant Navy out of the stable and overseas. You need one banner
and
horse.
And Jamaica and all those. Yeah.
That one thing I've noticed with them, they've been taking a few horses north of the border, and we've seen them do it on Saturday Metro races for a while. Well, Kieran did before Dave jumped on board as well. But even midweek now, you see them running at Gosford and going up there. They're really placing their horse as well.
Have they got their annex stable up there yet? They intend to. Kieran Maher's next big project was a Sydney annex.
The reason why.
Tony McAvoy, one of our elite trainers, must have been monitoring Lormy In on a quick backup from Wednesday to Saturday, proved too strong in race two.
They run for the money at the 450. It's Hanamosa with Casino 14 under a grip, moving up on the outside to dispute the lead. Then North Africa three deep, Gidar the outside under the whip, and then came Lormy In down the centre running on. It's Casino 14 approaching the 200 in front of North Africa. Lormy In the outside's the big danger. Casino 14 with Lormy In. Lormy In moves up, takes the lead on the quick backup from Casino 14. Punched out, Lure Me In. Won it from a photo. Real Head Bobber, Honey Wine or North Africa, then Casino 14 play that song we gilly.
I thought a really good ride from Luke Curry here, Matty. Early on, he ran the risk of being trapped wide and he had to almost restrain to get back, but then he just he made that decision early and that put him in a position where he was just able to I suppose, get that little bit of cover and get in a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And he didn't have to, he came from off, but he didn't come ahead to have to make too much ground. When they, you suddenly notice when they straightened that he was only 3 lengths, 2.5 lengths off and ready to go. And God, another, gee, what a savage blow early for punters. Like that first favourite, we've all been adrift. A lot of people were invested there. And I think everyone was of the view in parlays and all sorts of things that Casino 14 at least couldn't miss a place. And that's what it did. And it looked, the favourite looked poised to strike, but he just sort of hit a, he just sort of flattened to the line without dashing to the line, and nice powerful strong win. And a, he's just such a, an artist at just getting the run right, Luke Curry, isn't he? He just knows when to pounce, you know, yeah, like all the top jocks.
Well, I was in the Casino 14 bandwagon and the turn into the home straight. I wasn't on bad terms with myself. Listening to Johnny Allen afterwards, he was just of the opinion that, you know, maybe the end of the 1,600 metres.
Yeah,
because
that's
you said,
like,
Matty, you worried about, you couldn't see him missing the place, and it was the last 1,500 metres or so where he conceded ground, Trent.
That's what I got in my notes here. Question mark at the mile. He had, I mean, he worked across from a wide gate, but he didn't really have to use much petrol. He had a pretty cruisy run up on the speed and he was there, he was presented, he had his chance and he just wilted late. So I reckon 1600 metres is probably just a bridge too far at this stage of his career. Whether he gets that when he becomes more furnished remains to be seen. He's got the right trainer to do so, but no, I thought it was just the mile just was his downfall.
And he had to lump the 59.5 to get it too, didn't he? And, you know, most of the others around him were getting weight, so, you know.
Something we don't often see with the winner, Wednesday to Saturday. I mean, we see quick backups maybe week to week, but in Australian racing, you know, 3 days apart, it's very rare. So well done to Tony McAvoy. And listening to Luke post-race, and Tony may have even mentioned this himself, that he always had that intention heading into Sandown on Wednesday that he was going to go again on Saturday. It wasn't just an afterthought. So it's really good thinking and, you know, not surprising from one of our gun trainers.
And we've got to temper the fact that that the first couple of races were benchmark 70. So when we're looking at these races going forward, the horses have got to go to a similar type of grade unless they win impressively and they're going to go right on. I think certainly in the first, Star Falls going to end up better than a benchmark 70 horse. Yep. And I thought in the second too, I thought there was the thought going in, particularly from Dino yesterday morning, Matty, was that Play That Song might be looking for a little bit further, and she just couldn't muster, really. I was talking to Jack Turnbull from the stable afterwards, and he thought that he'd talk to Mike, and maybe they'd even play around and get the blinkers back on and just try and sharpen her up a little bit or step her up in distance. But she was solid enough to the line, but she just couldn't participate in the race when it mattered.
But as you say, I mean, these weren't strong fields, so the danger is kind of almost over-dissecting them, you know, like this, you know, it might go to a over a bit more ground next start and be competitive, yeah.
Just took a little bit of a change in tactics with North Africa, who I thought, you know, most of us probably thought from an inside draw would be right there on the speed, tucked in behind and then worked home okay late. So maybe, Trent, that's just going to add a little bit more of a dimension to him as Pat Carey steps him up a bit further in trip.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. They'd be looking for the further distance. Pat Carey's, we know he's a tremendous trainer of stays, and I think this horse will be, you know, more appreciative over more ground. We mentioned heat stress earlier. A couple more in the stewards report here. Can't Refuse, I know it was 100 to one and finished last, but has pulled up with heat stress, and even Gidar as well, who was well found, or well in the market, I should say. Lockie King reporting that it may have come to the end of its prep, and a post-race vet revealed he has pulled up with heat stress as well and will now be spelled.
So a bit to take out of the stewards report, maybe some forgive runs in the second race, but Lure Me In, Tony McAvoy and Luke Curry, a good performance and a good training performance on the quick backup from Wednesday.
It's Angelic Spirit being rated here by 3/4 of a length to Miss Mo, 2 lengths Champagne Cocktail, Taikiato, another Bullseye fifth out, 3 deep from Evil, Lil Egyptian Bullet dug along, It's a Myth trying to track into it, down the outside of the track, Miss Wahoo with a bit to do, followed by Tranquil Miss, but Angelic Spirit has the ears pricked and goes for home. At the 200 metres, 3 lengths Miss Mo, Egyptian Bullet, Champagne Cocktail, followed by Evil Lil, but it's all Angelic Spirit, 100 metres to go, still 2.5 lengths in front. She's going to trounce them. Angelic Spirit easily won it by a length and a quarter. Champagne Cocktail, Miss Wahoo, It's a Myth, followed by Miss Mo, Evil Lil.
And understandably, under the conditions, Matty, the track upgraded to a good 3 at this stage of the day, and certainly wasn't a disadvantage to be riding the speed, but dropping back from that stakes race and a tough performance on speed in the Summon Stakes, Angelic Spirit appeared to have recovered well.
And Michi on a front runner.
There you go.
It was another Meech Peach, wasn't it?
Well, it was. But having wrapped up Jamie and all the others on front runners, Jamie got it. I don't know whether by her own intention, but that, she got it wrong the previous start, didn't she, on Angelic Spirit? So just, you know, we were grappling with this whole conundrum race meeting yesterday, Warren, and one of them was what we took out of Angelic Spirit at the previous start, where she went too hard, and whether she'd leave it on the canvas or whether she could just be rated that little bit better per sectional. And it was the latter, and Angelic Spirit got the money. And another race where the betting markets really told the story. We were wondering about another Bullseye first up, and the market said no, and that's how she raced. It was a no. And there were one or two others that were sort of well-backed as well, but maybe Miss Wahoo, if we are of the theory that it was a bit on pacer-ish and that the swoopers weren't advantaged, then Miss Wahoo might have been one of those ones that, that the little track pattern didn't help.
Trent, I was away for the Sandown meeting, but interested in the boys' comments from the Summon Stakes and just wondering how Angelic Spirit would be. I was very keen to look at her in the Manning Yard. She looked really bright and fit. She actually stood out a little bit in terms of her opposition yesterday. So tells you that Trent Besutton and Natalie Young had been able to get that spring back in her step. And I think they were pretty confident the way she'd run yesterday. And again, Linda Meech, take us through your thoughts on how she was able to control the race. What did you think when the race was unfolding?
Yeah, I thought she was going to be there right at the end because she cruised across from an outside gate and pretty much had it on her own terms, and she ran at sectionals that she's able to do this horse. I think she probably went a little bit too hard at Sandown, and the key for me with this horse, besides Linda Meech's brilliant ride, was back to 1,400 metres and back to 78 grade, probably just a bridge too far for her up in class at Group 3 company last time, and the 1,500 probably too far for her as well. So they were the two keys for me, back to 1,400 and the 78, and then Linda Meech riding another Perler probably makes things, adds to a winning combination.
Didn't affect the outcome of the race, but Clayton Douglas suspended in this race, and there was some obvious interference behind Angelic Spirit when Champagne Cocktail moved out at about the 200 metre mark, and the major sufferer was Craig Williams. He had a look at the vision, but credit to Craig, he didn't want to waste the steward's time in terms of a protest fourth versus second. It impacted the horse, but didn't anywhere, you know, not the margin that the stewards would have had to adjudicate for Matty. So that's proactive jockeyship there from Craig Williams, but Clayton Douglas taking his medicine, being quite forthright with the stewards in terms of, yep, sorry, take my medicine.
See, sometimes apologising in advance is a good idea, Trent. You know, it sort of helps in all walks of life. Another little dip at odds there, that Champagne Cocktail ran into one much better, but it was $31 into 19, so they just missed there.
Yeah, and in the right grade of race, there might be something for Melissa Wells to look forward to Champagne Cocktail, who might still have a little bit of improvement left in her preparation. The run-through, Trent, Maddie's always already referenced that another Bullseye was easy, so we just put a pin through that first up run. She wasn't ready. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. I think you that's how you see that on face value there. Teodora stood flat-footed, lost ground four lengths, and in the stewards' report, a warning will be placed on the mare's record. So, you know, when you're missing the start by four lengths, you've really got no chance in a race like that. I thought It's a Myth ran okay, another one for Philip Stokes. So, you know, maybe with more experience at that track and settling and the like, Philip will find the key to It's a Myth and can be winning a race soon. But it's not really too much to add away from the winner. Egyptian Bullet was probably a little bit plain for mine. Was well in the market, had a nice weight relief with the 3 kilos off for Lockie King and just sort of ground away. I probably expected better from Egyptian Bullet, but all honours to the winner here.
Yeah, maybe 1,400 metres and Egyptian Bullet mightn't be the right scenario. Maybe it's the right time to try her, but maybe she's just not that good or not as effective at that distance range. A benchmark 78 over 2,000 metres was race 4 on the program, and Peter Moody, Anthony Mithen and the boys associated with Mr Quickie were trackside for the performance yesterday.
Royal Order just in front with Mr. Quickie there across the track. They were followed by Calibration, As You're Right, the outside from Sweet Mischief, and Credence is running on too. And then Junior Burger back to the inside. It's Mr. Quickie kicking at the 200 from As You're Right. Credence, then Sabahit. Mr. Quickie, As You're Right, Credence, 3 across the track. Credence, Mr. Quickie, Credence runs off the track slightly. Mr. Quickie kicks. Mr. Quickie or Credence, it might be that order, but it's close. Then As You're Right, Sabahit from Sweet Mischief back behind them, Royal Order.
Now, Matty, I don't want to open up an old chestnut here, but Mr. Quickie covered a bit of ground. Yeah, I don't want to open up an old
don't
chestnut.
Don't do that to Farley.
But Ben Allen pleaded guilty to a charge of using the whip 12 times prior to the 100-metre mark, which is 7 times more than permitted. The horse has won by a nose. Should there be any course of action for the Connections of Credence, given that there's been a blatant transgression of the rule and you've been beaten by a narrow margin?
Yeah, no, it's a good chestnut to keep bringing up because it's unresolved, isn't it? And every time it comes up, we wonder about what the rule should be. And yeah, it's a difficult position for the jockey to be in. Their primary concern is winning the race. They're not going to be worried about whatever penalty. Under the current situation, Ben Allen's going to be going, oh, whatever, I've got to win the race on Mr. Quickie. Moody's here, Metho's firing in, you know, whatever. So they're not going to be concerned about a whip breach unless there is a severe penalty that's instituted. That's it. We know what's going to happen. If I bash this horse, I'm going to cop a month or something like that. So at the moment, because it's unresolved and it's sort of a, you know, he got it, what did he get, 12 meetings or something like that. Unless there's a possibility the horse can lose the race, then they're going to continue to play with the rule, aren't they? Because they know that winning the race is of greater benefit than whatever 10, 12 meetings.
So. And what the stewards say, Trent, I believe, is that, yes, he's transgressed the rule, but they have to determine whether a transgression of the rule in terms of interference or whipping has given that horse an advantage, and they can't quantify the
advantage. And they're not going to. That's not going to happen.
Well, it's an impossible scenario.
Exactly. It's so subjective. It's just a ridiculous rule. If they're worried about the image, if that's what it is with too many whip strikes in a certain period of time, like, you can't be half pregnant with this, I reckon. If you're going to do it properly. Otherwise, just go back to how it was. I just think it's just ridiculous. There's too many occasions where jockeys are transgressing and whipping the horse too many times, and they win the race, and it's by a small margin, and they just get fined or suspended, and nothing happens. I just think it's crazy.
Well, and the other thing too is, as the bigger picture of all this evolves, and there's greater scrutiny on the whip per se, not just whip strikes and rules and all that sort of stuff, there is going to become, you know, look, I still don't get why, if it's all about the perception of whipping to the outside world and all that sort of stuff, I don't understand why we don't ban the use of the whip in the last 100 metres. It's the most watched, most replayed. 95% of the time, the horse is in full flight, and that's going to make no difference anyway. I think that adjustment makes more sense to me, and because it's all about perception of us and the animal and all that sort of stuff. I don't understand. You talk to Warren, any jockey or trainer, and if they're true to themselves, they'll say that at the 150-metre mark, a horse is in full flight, and you can't whip it to make it run faster. It's just, it's a myth. It's a myth about, you know, the kitchen sink analogy, you know?
Well, there's certainly, I suppose, varied opinions on that, and it is a hot topic. But I suppose in terms of Credence, Trent, what really cost him was not the excessive use of the whip on Mr. Quickie, but that ducking in close to the finish line. And, gee, credit to Fred Kersley, who reacted very quickly. It could have got messy, and he was able to drag the horse off quickly, but that loss in momentum due to the fact that Fred had to straighten the horse and then to balance up and surge again and only just miss. It's not hard to man a case to say that if he ran straight, Credence would have won the race.
Yeah, he was a bit drunk, wasn't he? It's how he looked over the concluding stages. And as you rightly pointed out, Warren, it was really good horsemanship from Fred Kersley. And I thought initially on first look, Azurite was a little bit stiff because he sort of laid in on Azurite, who was sort of coming through that gap. But I went back and watched the tape, and I don't know that it really affected Azurite. I think he was maybe peaking on his run or was just sort of a bit dour to the line. So I don't think he was unlucky. It was a tremendous run by Azurite, though. At 100-1, he's been beaten a length and a half or even less. Yes, I think it certainly could have cost the winner the race.
I think it had a marginal impact on Savaheed also, who was making that run out wider with Credence and just had to sort of change course a little bit with the significant quick shift that was happening in front of Savaheed. So Johnny Allen had to be a little bit thinking on his feet there also, as did Fred Kersley. Now, these horses are up in distance. They match motors a little bit, or around this distance range match motors a bit. From the race at Moonee Valley, Royal Order and Calibration, what did you make of their performances?
I thought wrong race.
Yeah, I thought Royal Order was okay. He's racing really well this prep, isn't he? He's, three starts before this start, he's been in the money at every occasion, and he wasn't beaten all that far. I think
you are the most forgiving punter.
He's been beaten 2.9 lengths. He's an $8 shot. He wasn't $2.50. So, the market didn't expect him to come out and win.
Yeah, I am speaking through the
game. Well, there you go. We're finding a common theme here, aren't we? You're saying I'm forgiving. You're not so forgiving. You've backed him all.
I thought he was horrid, but anyway.
Calibration. Okay, well, we'll put this to you, Matty. Calibration, what'd you make of his run?
Average. Well, what do you... more can you say?
Yeah, he was okay.
You can tip him upside down and analyse him to the nth degree. You're still average.
Well, Ethan Brown dropped his whip at the 200-metre mark, so Matty's not going to use that as an excuse.
I want them to give up the whip.
I should have a bin there for him at the 200-metre mark. Throw your whip in there. We shouldn't take away from the performance of Mr. Quickie, because he ended up getting posted and having to make a pretty long run. And, gee, it was a strong performance. First racing prep, we see it so often, particularly with the Darren Weir stable, that they just continue to go on in shorter races. He'd quite often been the first horse to come off the bit. And, look, there's really some upside there for this horse. Maybe in his first prep, he's not going to go a lot further, but he's now a Saturday Benchmark 78 winner and won a good race worth $70,000. So he's had a great first racing prep, Matty.
Well, if there's a kind of a theme of the race, it's that Weir thing where they can just keep going and going and going. And if which one always sticks its head out in the finish, it's the Weir horse, isn't it? It's amazing what the reserves they find when it absolutely matters in the shadows of the post. And all these horses are Weirs, the Burning Fronts and all that, who string these races together. A lot of the time the margins with the picket fences are head, neck, long neck. It's just that sticking the neck out and they just keep winning. So,
and
for punters, it's... What an ally.
Yeah, that's right. And he's done a good job, as you mentioned, Warren. He was a fair way back, and he made a run, Benny Allen, and he tracked wide into the race. He sort of cruised into the race nicely, given how wide he came, and I think that is testament to Matty's point from the top of the show with how well the track race, and sort of in reference to the SMS that we've just received from this hero there that's called us a name, which I won't repeat, saying that it was a fast track and you had to be on the speed. I disagree. I know you, as I mentioned earlier, you probably wanted to be in the first half, but I don't think you certainly had to be on the speed, and this horse was testament to that.
Well, Cleo's Poet was on the speed, but arguably went a little bit too quick, and noted in the stewards' report that, you know, after Arva Racing, Talia Hope was just a victim of circumstances there, just had to go with Cleo's Poet, and she even wasn't aware the sizeable gap that she'd opened up on the rest of the field. And after Arva Racing and going that hard, you can understand Cleo's Poet getting that little bit tired late, Trent.
Yeah, and has pulled up with thumps as well, so that's not going to do you any favours.
78 race over 2,000 metres. And Mr. Quickie, who's had a terrific racing preparation and a combination, a hybrid of the Wiley Dalziel colours and the Rosemont colours, plenty of racing's colourful characters involved in Mr. Quickie. They had a terrific day yesterday.
At the 500 metres, leading from Hay Bale and Matty, Prairie Fire runs up behind those horses in the yellow and red, followed by Prezzato, St. Valorum. Next in the field is Gibbon, Sovereign Duke on the fence with Wind Force. Urak right down the outside from Manolo Blahnik and Kalajani Lad. No doubt about it, approaches the 200. Here's Matty on the outside with St. Valorum. Further back is Prezzato, St. Valorum up to No Doubt About It. Matty, Prezzato, Urak down the outer. Prezzato up to St. Valorum, St. Valorum, Prezzato! Prezzato's beaten St. Valorum. Third, Manolo Blahnik from Kākanui, possibly fourth.
Well, Craig Williams had a bit of a day out, Trent, along with Luke Curry and Linda Meach. They were very dominant throughout the course of the day. And Prezzato hadn't had a lot of luck recently, and reward for connections in the stable to get the nice run yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm tipping the owners were pretty happy too, because they... I think they were offered some good money from Hong Kong, which they elected to knock back, and they've stuck with this horse, and good on him. Hopefully he turns a corner, and that was just his second win at his 13th start, and he hadn't won for a while, looking back over a year, November the 7th last year when he beat Bandipur, and he's got good form around good horses. He ran second to Nature Strip as well. He's got more form around Bandipur and some other good horses as well. So I think he's got ability. He's probably been a bit of a head-scratcher for Aladdin and Zara.
How'd this race look from the couch, Manny?
Another, you know how we just kept talking yesterday about how this was a bit of a minefield, and most races presented these scenarios that you had to get your head around, and one of them in this was Prairie Fire, wasn't it? You know, and we were wondering whether the marketplace would sort of help us, lead us into the right direction, and late at the death knock, it was 550 into 440, and this is the one that came through the two-year-old form and all that. And
the trial,
the trial was indifferent, wasn't it? You know? Mm.
Yeah, I think the jury's out and possibly heading towards a not too complimentary verdict. But yesterday pulled up with heat stress and a slow recovery and did cop some interference from Given. So perhaps a forgivable day yesterday, but you'd want to see something improve next time.
You would want to be not quick to forgive, though, wouldn't you? Because you'll be broke if you do. I reckon the horse that's flying is, and he's almost reinvented his race pattern, is St. Valorum, who...
He's just so honest, isn't he?
I had something on him in a 9.55 at Mooney Valley at big odds, and he sat third defence. I mean, St. Valorum's a get-back, scream-home horse. And then even yesterday, he's repackaged himself, Warren, and whether that actually makes him more effective, that he can, on a, maybe if the track was a bit on pace yesterday, it would have disadvantaged him a campaign ago, but not the way he's settling on the speed now.
Manolo Blahnik, you know what you get with him. Mm. Tony Noonan, I think, on the record is saying, look, he's not wound up. He'll probably improve with that run. So he was one to make significant late ground yesterday and was easy throughout the majority of betting trends. So I think there's probably a race for Manolo Blahnik in similar grade in the weeks ahead.
Yeah, I really like Manolo Blahnik. When he gets the race run to suit and there's speed on and he's going to get back. He had 61.5 first up yesterday as well over an unsuitable distance. And despite the betting drift and Tony's words, I still fell into him yesterday and I backed him each way. I was pretty happy. He really got to the line well under that big weight. So I think a win's not too far away for Manolo Blahnik.
Interested what Mellon thinks of Urach. Obviously had the picket fence and then change of stable, change of circumstance. Hasn't won since. Forgivable maybe first up the straight.
Yep.
And then yesterday was kind of a quarter of a pass mark. You know, where do you go with that run yesterday? It was sort of spec late in market. So what do you reckon about Urach, Warren?
Jury's out. I think certainly appreciated the softer tracks, I think, earlier in her career and seemed to dominate on them. We're on a good three by this stage yesterday, and all of the points that you made are also relevant. I think the fact that she's relatively lightly raced and taken time, she's probably a bit of a management type of horse, and look, she'd be fitter with those two runs under the belt. She looked terrific in the mounting yard yesterday, so they've certainly got her in great health, but you know, her performance was, I suppose, you know, beaten all about a length and a half, I suppose, in a bunch finish. That's okay for this grade, but I think there was expectations that she might be going on to better races than this. I thought Kakanui at big odds was
very good,
ducking and weaving and ran well. There'll be something there in a similar race, maybe. They can't all win the next time they clash.
Sometimes I reckon the best way to work out the form of a race is if they transplanted this race in 2 weeks' time, over the same circumstances, who do you want to be on? I don't think I want to be on Urach if they run it again in 2 weeks. You know?
Manolo Blahnik for me.
You'd be on Milano?
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe it was the one, yeah.
I'd be leaning towards Manolo Blahnik also. I thought Kakanui was good, and I thought that, look, they're an even bunch and they'll go around in similar types of races, and you know, even a horse like Hay Bale's effective down the straight. So the 2 weeks' time, Matty, also depends where the races run, because some of these horses are better at different tracks.
Yep.
No doubt about it. Philip Stokes reporting that she will now go for a freshen up, has come to the end of her prep.
Yeah, and look, it's probably been a little bit frustrating. There's been one or two runs on this campaign where I don't think had the best of luck. So there might have
started the valley for one.
A preparation that got away from, no doubt about it, just not being able to pick up that victory.
Into the straight at the 400 metres. It's Albertino kicking for home. Two lengths to Fame List, followed by Kilimanjaro. Beauty Ways out of the 1-1 and presents up the middle. Then came Snowano, Torgerson and Civil Disobedience. Beauty Way, it's been well backed. And at the 200 metres, goes for home from Kilimanjaro. Torgerson's out late. Snowano, Civil Disobedience. But Beauty Way's coming away. And Beauty Way won it well. Punched out by a length and three quarters. Torgerson, Snowano, Civil Disobedience.
Well, Beauty Away arrived at Graham Begg Stables with some good credentials from New Zealand. Seems to have settled in well to the surroundings at Pinecliff. And following that victory yesterday, Graham joins us this morning. Congratulations, Graham.
Yeah, g'day, Warren. How are you?
Going well, and Stables going well too, with that victory on effectively the home track at Mornington on Friday with Exceedingly Easy. When you pick up a horse from New Zealand, you're expecting to head to the races sooner rather than later, or I suppose let the horse tell you. How do you go about getting him to settle into your surroundings?
Yeah, well, he went a month between runs. He ran on Melbourne Cup Day at Ellerslie. And I always sort of, you know, people question, oh, a month between runs, but, you know, I always equate it a trip over on the plane, and that's like having another race. So, you know, his fitness was no problem with his fitness. He was kept up to the mark, and, you know, he was in good shape when he arrived over, and it was a matter of just keeping him ticked over.
His form is there for all of us to read. You mentioned he was in good order. What style of a horse did you see him? How did he settle into your environment?
Yeah, he was a bit strange at first, but once he was there a few days, he really started to adapt really well, and he's actually quite a kind horse. He's had a few, you know, soundness issues during his career, and so that sort of suits my style. Just treat him a bit lightly, and look after him.
Graham, he's had 18 starts now for 5 wins and raced in 4 countries, and he's owned by the same owner as Beauty Generation, who's could have a big day in Hong Kong today. How did he get to your stable?
Yeah, I actually trained for Mr. Kwok and he decided to send him over. The reason why he was in New Zealand is obviously with the quarantine laws in this country at the moment, they're not taking horses back from Hong Kong, so he had to go and spend sort of 6 months in a neutral country, and that being New Zealand. So he raced over there.
Not Switzerland?
And the prize money's not that great over there, unfortunately. They decided, okay, now was time to bring him over.
Yeah, he's, he looks to have a good deal of ability. What were you sort of expecting from him yesterday and post-race? What are your plans with him going forward?
Well, going into the race, I sort of only had the horse sort of 2.5 weeks, and as I said, he was in very good order when he arrived over here, so I wasn't 100% what to expect, to be truthful, because I didn't really gallop him really, really hard. I didn't work him in company of other horses because he's a little bit, can get a little bit aggressive. That's why he wears a nose band. And, you know, so I wasn't really 100% sure. But one thing I did take from his last start in New Zealand, he really hit the line really hard. And he has had form up to 2,000 metres back in England. And his last start in New Zealand, it was only 1,400 metres. So I knew that the 1,600 would be right up his alley. And also with the issues that he's had in the past, you know, the Pakenham track's very forgiving, and also he does love the cut in the ground, so going forward that'll be a big help for us.
Hey, quick turnaround between spring and autumn, the good horses back in the swing of things?
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Written By certainly back in work. He came back into work last Monday, and he's gearing up for an autumn assault. Our libretto's still in the paddock, obviously she had a longer spring. So we'll leave her in the paddock for another probably 3 weeks, and then we'll gear her up for Sydney.
You mentioned that you're already trained for Mr. Kwok, the owner of Beauty Way and Beauty Generation, but is there something a little bit special about able to win a race for him on the weekend that the focus of the world's racing attention is on Hong Kong?
Absolutely. He was very excited after the race, and obviously, you know, they watched the race, and they were very, very excited, you know. And, you know, as you well know over there, it's a face thing. So I'd say you'll have bragging rights over there today at the races, and hopefully they'll have a successful day with his runners in Hong Kong today.
And then a plan. You can go and talk to Mr. Kwok after Beauty Generation wins today, highlight the All-Star Mile, map out a sort of a logistical campaign, pine clear for the nice little pitch into that race. There's a bit of work for you to do with Mr. Kwok, I think, after today especially.
Yeah, unfortunately with the quarantine laws, Matt, it's going to prevent any of those horses coming out of Hong Kong to race here. So, you know, the government haven't shifted on that. They've had plenty of time to sort of to move on that, and it's actually hurting our industry down here, to be truthful. And so you know, it's something that's got to be addressed very, very quickly.
Well, they were supposed to have got on to it. Yeah, exactly. We expected resolution by now, but it's lingering, isn't it? And that's a scenario that won't happen because of it, yeah.
Graham, he was 5 into $3.60 yesterday. Just by the way you were talking, were you a little bit surprised that he won yesterday first up for you?
Look, I knew he'd run very well. I was very surprised at the support for the horse. But, you know, this day and age, you know, people doing their ratings and all that, professional punters, that, you know, this horse has had form, you know, in four jurisdictions now. But, you know, they work it out pretty well. And, you know, we only take them to the races when they're going to run well. So, you know, people work it out, don't they?
You referenced the crossover noseband and the fact that he can be that little bit keen. And Luke Curry's one of our really great horsemen. And, he just looked to lob into a sweet spot and travel comfortably. So you must have been pleased with the way that he travelled under Luke.
Yeah, absolutely. And Luke said after the race, made the comment, he said, I was never going to get beaten. He said he was just travelling so beautifully underneath him. And, you know, he just had the race, just couldn't have planned it any better.
Good weekend for the stable. Graham kicked off with that winner Friday at Mornington and an important victory yesterday with Beauty Way. Looking forward to seeing progress with your stable, and looking forward to seeing Beauty Generation go round at Sha Tin later this afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
Matty, Luke Curry just, as he said to Graham post-race, and that's the best scenario, it was never going to get beaten, and that's the way it looked. How'd it look from the couch?
Yeah,
Last couch reference.
Well, I think at the start of the day, I was in a sitting position. By this stage, I think I was horizontal on the couch on one elbow.
Well, it's good to get a different angle on it.
Yeah, it was. I've got a different angle on the race. I just think he was the best horse in an average race, wasn't he? And who knows how far he'll go, but, I don't think he was up against much, but he looked like a nice-ish horse, didn't he, don't you think?
Plenty of discussion yesterday morning that the money for Age of Fire was a bit questionable. Perhaps a wet track was more to his liking, and he drifted to SP at $7, Trent. So there was certainly a bit of a move against Age of Fire, and you've referenced with Graham that there was good money for Beauty Way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as Matty said, best horse in the race, had the best run in the race. One out, one back. It was a lovely ride from Luke Curry. Really nice turn of foot. I think he's... In an off-season day of racing, I think he's one we can take away and look forward to over the next couple of weeks and months. I think if he continues to race through summer, he can pick up a few more races in a race that didn't probably have a lot of highlights. Age of Fire, I thought he was okay. Matty's going to say I'm too forgiving again, but he got held up a little bit, you know, in the straight there. And I'm not saying he was good, and the drift suggested that he wasn't in for a big day, but. He was a little bit luckless.
Was there any post-race with Fastnet Latina?
Yeah, pulled up lame, so we're forgiving of the performance of Fastnet Latina. I think there's a few in this race, and it was an open handicap, that can find their right race, and some over more ground, in particular Civil Disobedience and Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, I thought he was good, Kilimanjaro, first run for the stable. He's now with Mara Nusis after being with Team Williams, of course, and trained by Liam Howley. I thought he stuck to his task. I think they're going to... put him over the sticks in winter. I think he'll be a really good jumper, to be honest, the way he races, because he's got decent flat ability, and if he can jump, I reckon he'll be, when we get to Warrnambool and some of the bigger races, I've just got a feeling he might be right there.
There'd been some vision of, or seen the vision of the gallop at Moonee Valley. He worked really well there. He paraded well, and look, he took a while. He was a bit slowly away, then he got into a spot, and I think just race condition gave out late. I think he ran well, but Civil Disobedience is a horse that's going to get out over further. He hit that little bit of a flat spot. I thought the last little bit of his race was very good, and Torgerson's probably reached his mark. That's, he was back in the field but got out and worked home, no match for the winner. I thought Civil Disobedience and Kilimanjaro to some extent also were the two that take out of the race, Trent.
Yeah, I agree. I've got that down here. Matty, what are you, anything for you?
No, nope,
just the winner.
Beauty Way, a good performance, Graham Began, Luke Curry combining, and never in doubt if you were part of the charge in that saw him SP at $3.60.
4:25 out. The leader is Chippenham with Amadeus on the outside. They were followed behind them by Turn It Around. Schwa Border needs a run. Mr. Moneybags, Just a Dreamer down the outside from Sosie Bond. Amadeus and Chippenham together, followed by Schwa Border, Just a Dreamer and Mr. Moneybags with Sosie Bond. It's Amadeus at the 125 just in front of Chippenham. Mr. Moneybags, Just a Dreamer. Amadeus is holding on. Mr. Moneybags coming at it. Amadeus goes back to back. Just beats Mr. Moneybags. Third, Just a Dreamer from Sosie Bond, then Chippenham, Sam Slick, Schwa Border. Further back in the field.
A good day to go back to back with the rich Vabis money on offer there, and Vabis Gold. And great to see Joan Walker in the winner's stall there. Goes back to Reckless, the breeder and racer of Reckless, and Amadeus in those colours. Joan's biggest question post-race, Trent, was, do you think I should put my hat on for the celebrations? And she did style up fashionably to go and accept the trophy. And he's a horse that is very close to the heart of the connections. And Joan's one of racing's real treasures.
Yeah, absolutely. And well done. Back-to-back wins in this race. And well done to Greg Miles, who found Amadeus yesterday on the panel. Good winner here for Mick Ken and Craig Williams. Tough win. Mr. Moneybags was charging, and Just a Dreamer as well. And he really stuck to the task and saw it out well.
Matty, I think just a summing up of the situation and positive from Craig Williams early from that barrier, saying, well, I've got to make a decision. And he got into that spot probably... long run in there, and I think for connections it was a long straight, but he was able to hold on.
Mick said afterwards that he thought it was a long straight, and in an ideal world he probably wouldn't have found the front just that early. And Mick is not a social media person at all, but Mick Kent Racing has a Twitter handle now, apparently, and there was a photo of Joan dressed to the nines celebrating the win, and that connection between Mick and Joan has been going on for a long time, and it's a really special one. And as you say, she's a perennial Joan, and she's the best-dressed person on any racetrack too, Joan. So good on them. A bit of a project for the stable. Won it last year. You can mix a bit of a repeat offender. You know, he was obviously looking to repeat the win, and he pulled it off. So I think he would have been wasn't a Melbourne Cup or anything, but I think he would have been quite chuffed to have been able to pull off that little project with Amadeus, and I thought it was a good tenacious win from a very fit horse and held them all off. There's a couple in the race that I, going in, I like Jester Dreamer going in, and you run the race again with a bit of luck and it probably is right there even closer. Sosie Bond did the bluffing thing again. And
does anyone need to self-report? Are they back Sosie
Bond? No, I didn't. I put it in no multiples or anything. I was true to myself.
No, although I did, I was reporting on a mounting yard performances, and you can't see Sosie Bond in the mounting yard and probably not think that he's pick of the yard. But
yesterday,
he's a pretty little thief, isn't he?
From a punting point of view, you've got to know that he's Sosie Bond.
Well, he's a say your thing, and most of them look absolutely beautiful, but we know he just doesn't win. And I was just staggered yesterday that he started to favourite.
Well,
just
Hazy look, overpumped him in the morning.
Tom
no,
was...
No, DA.
Oh, right. Okay. Mm. So we had Tom Melbourne start favourite for one of the races over the Spring Carnival, which just still beggars belief. And I was equally as shocked yesterday that Sosie Bond started favourite yesterday. I know he'd been racing well, but he won 1 of 28 or 1 of 29.
Yeah. Like, yes. Everything you say is true. Everything. But was it Dave or was he on Friday? He said, I think it was either Greg or maybe I'd heard it somewhere else, but those questions that you don't want to hear if you're anti Sosie Bond, and it was like, how's his track work? Oh, really good. Like, as normal? Oh, a bit better. It's like, oh, here we go again. I reckon, Warren, if there's a takeout horse, it might be just because if it was probably difficult to make ground from right back, maybe Sam Slick is the one who might just casually go through summer and win a race or two.
Had to make that wide sweeping run, didn't he? And he can get up that little bit further in trip. Mr. Moneybags was good. The barrier was always going to be a bit of a challenge, whereas Amadeus offset the barrier quickly. Mr. Moneybags had a bit of work to do from back in the field, got close, probably negligent that I didn't touch base with Jai McNeil about his thoughts on Mr. Moneybags yesterday, but he ran well. There might be a summer race for him. And Schwarz Border, Trent, in the stewards report, Johnny Allen just not sure that he ran the trip out and also pulled up mildly lame. So there's a forgive, I suppose, for Schwab Water, who's deep into a preparation.
Yeah, slow recovery as well and lame. So quite a few things against there. So might go for a spell now, I would imagine, Schwab Water.
Darren Weir settled up the answer, my friend, who'd had a freshen up, and he was at 1,200 metres yesterday in the last.
It's Glen Rowan Prince first for the judge from the answer, my friend, followed by Toy Boy the outside, Bassett behind those from Keener Ray Suspense, Good Project, Princess of Queens and Proud Wolf down the outside. It's the answer, my friend, taking the lead with Keener Ray, followed by Toy Boy and then Princess of Queens. It's the answer, my friend, just in front of Keener Ray. Princess of Queens is starting to come home late. The answer, my friend, digs in though. The answer, my friend, in front. And the answer, my friend, won it from Princess of Queens. Third a photo, Sylphide or Toy Boy.
Well, he's a no-nonsense horse, Matty, isn't he? He puts himself in the race. He's, sometimes performed below expectations, but at 1,200 metres, he appeared to have his zest back yesterday. How did you see it?
Well, he's been one of my horses. He took me to Seminyak with a few mates, and I just thought I had him nailed, the answer, my friend, as how his preparation would evolve and when to get on and when not to get on. And the market yesterday, Warren, supported my idea that maybe second, third, fourth up and then building into the preparation. Big, gross horse. I think everyone, I know he had trialled well and all that sort of stuff and he was the best horse and there was that attraction to him, but I think the market basically said, oh, not today, And
he got out to SP $10, so you're right, there wasn't a lot of support.
He was kind of, underdone and in the market and that, but I think what happened in the end, geez, a monster, isn't he? He kind of owns the space. He's hard to get around and past, isn't he? And I just think despite the probably even an expectation in the stable that it was just one of those what-if runs that he would... I think he just did it because he's just the best horse, didn't
he? He got into that lovely rhythm just somewhere near the speed, but not, and seemed to relax well enough at the 1,200-metre tempo. He didn't want to rip and tear.
Yeah, and you know what I reckon? He's one of those horses that big weights don't necessarily affect. He's a rolling momentum horse. He doesn't have to stop and start and make three runs. And I think if people thought the 61 kilos was going to stop him, I don't think they factored in the kind of horse he is,
And looking at him in the parade ring, Trent, he certainly looked like the run would help bring him on. He didn't have a real summer coat on him or anything. He looked certainly forward enough, but I think there's some improvement to come, and that's what the market was probably telling us.
Yep, and for all the reasons you've outlined, I made him the run of the day. I thought it was the biggest win of the day. 61 kilos first up. His first up record, 6 starts for just 3 minor placings, no wins. 1,200 metres, 2 starts for a second. So we expected him to be better for the run and out further in trip. I thought he was excellent. And as Matty said, just the class horse, the best horse in the race, and class really came to the fore on this occasion.
And recent preps say that he can now you know, like 1400 Flemington and all that sort of stuff. He's going to be very reliable for the next few weeks, isn't
he? Yeah, if he's able to produce that first up at 1200 metres, when he gets to 1400 metres, fitter, and you can sort of use the blowtorch a little bit, he'll be really hard to run down. Princess of Queens, back on firmer ground, a real positive for her, and she made good ground from back in the field, not to win though. So certainly an on-speed horse winning the last, and another thing that I suppose pays credit to the team that prepared the track, although the answer, my friend, did wander off to the middle of the track a little bit. He was able to still maintain that gallop late in the day.
Yeah, and this is another race where the betting markets were interesting. Like the one who was off in the market was the winner, and Toy Boy was $34 or something in, right into $9 at the death knock, you know, in the last hour or so, $15 into $9, and ran up to it. There was a gear change, and obviously they were... I reckon if people thought there was an on-pace pattern, he charged out of the gates out wide. I think they thought, well, we're going to be up there, and it didn't quite work out because he was posted. But he was really, really good. And I reckon, again, if there was a hint that there's a pattern, I think Talia Hope was determined to get going quite early before rounding the home turn on Proud Wolf. So once they straightened, she was in a... didn't have to make up too much ground, and I think that sort of told in the end where she probably, you know, peaked on the run a bit, Talia, on Proud Wolf. But I'm with Trent. You can say whatever you like about the other horses, but the bottom line is the underdone couldn't win on the day. Best horse won, didn't he?
Yeah, and I thought Silfeed's run was good. First start for Matty Kamani. That was an encouraging one, encouraging run. The question mark for me, and I know I've just spoken about Sosie Bond in not so glowing terms, but Keen Array, what do they do with him now? I mean, he's carried 57 kilos here. He was pretty well in at the weights yesterday, I thought. He's just hopelessly out of form. I don't know where they go with him.
Yeah, no, certainly there's a question mark on what we'd seen from him earlier on. He won a nice barrier trial at Moonee Valley going back not that long ago. And Silfeed, your reference, Trent, just held up a little bit between the 400 and the 200, so even perhaps a better performance there. Stewart's couldn't find anything with Suspense, who was right in the market, but Luke Curry just a little bit concerned with the horse's action, so maybe just wait and see if there's some post-news to come with Suspense.
He's a classic horse, Keen Array, that even though the Lindsay Park system is as good a system as you get, he needs to be taken out of that system, doesn't he? Like, it's just not working. It's been going on for such a long time now that he's been running so without such zest that he needs a dramatic change of something, or else he's never going to win another race.
Well, yeah, he's a six-year-old gelding now, so, you know, what do they do with him? He's there to race, but he's
obviously got tired of that. Something's not working. What I mean. Maybe he just needs to be... something has to change.
So. Well, I'm sure David Hayes and the team have got some variety in what they can do there. They tried to employ a change of tactics yesterday and ride him more forward, but he didn't seem to have the pace to be able to get into that position. So, yeah, maybe there's a bit of a jury out, and certainly you wouldn't want to be chiming in. He was double figures yesterday, but Keen Array does need to lift. But I agree with you that the answer, my friend, certainly can go on and step up in distance. And I thought Silfeed and Princess of Queens, so at the top end of the race there, they certainly look like they're going well. We'll be back to wrap up. There was racing right around Australia yesterday. Arcadia Queen, the highlight.
Great shot, three-quarters Iconoclasm. Ollie makes his move with Trap for Fool starting to work into it. Akinar Stars handy to the home corner. Behind those then came Arcadia Queen. She comes to the outside and sets after the leaders. Great shot, Trap for Fools. Pike hasn't really moved. Now he does. Look at her go, the three-year-old. Arcadia Queen swept up and grabbed the lead. Further back is Material Man, but the babies run right away from them. Arcadia Queen, he had a peep over the right shoulder, and she's going to blow them away and record a sensational win in the Kingston Town. Arcadia Queen from Material Man. Galaxy Star rattling down the outside from Gatting. And then came the roughy prime.
He is the man of the moment. And Willie, even you must pinch yourself. First in the railway, second in the winter bottom, and now you've taken out the Group 1 Magic Millions Kingston Town. How good is this?
That's very good. I was checking over my shoulder. I stalked Ollie this time, so I thought I was right there, but I was checking over my shoulder. I got this so easy and so early. She felt brilliant throughout the whole run. Over-travelled a smidge, but honestly, once I let her go, what a beautiful horse.
Where does she rate amongst the fillies that you've ridden before?
I definitely ride up there. I don't know if anyone will ever top Perfect Reflection. That was probably just a memory and a nostalgia thing for me, the first time I won the race and the first time I had to diet and set myself for a race. So I don't think anyone will quite ever beat my Elite Bells and Perfect Reflections, but look, ability-wise, she's right up there, if not maybe even better.
Well, past Grant Williams, and you just said to him, I think she's something special.
Well, yes, we won the race five times, and I'd say that that was the best win I've seen.
What makes it so special in your eyes?
Oh, it's hard to tell. It's a first preparation, and it's very unusual. And we raced her a bit more than what we normally would our three-year-olds. I would have preferred her not to have raced in the Champion Fillies and the Guineas, but she did it so easily. We brought her through, and she just did the job.
Look forward to next year now, Bob, and Duff just pointed out there's a Golden Eagle worth $7.5 million in the latter part of November for the four-year-olds.
Yes, it's very exciting, isn't it? And they tell me you can use Regumate in New South Wales too. Yeah.
And that'll be interesting to see how that Regumate situation develops, Trent. But what we're talking about here is Arcadia Queen, who could be one of the most exciting prospects in Australian racing.
Oh, I think there's no doubt about that. She's probably the second best filly in the country behind Sunlight, I reckon, at the moment. Six starts, now five wins. Her first start of her career was in September this year, and she's just won a Group 1. And I know it's a Perth Group 1, and, you know, Trap for Fools, the McKinnon Stakes winner's probably come to the end of his prep, and but she, that turn of foot she's got, she can take that anywhere and be competitive in good races, I reckon.
Trent's Refton Sunlight, Matty, they're unlikely to clash given that we're seeing Arcadia Queen win Group 1 races over 1,800 metres. What are your thoughts?
Well, it was interesting, Vince Accardi, off the back of, and I'm not a religious follower of the nth degree ratings, but they are a genuine measure, though, and I think what I took out of something that he observed the other day is just the status of Galaxy Star and Arcadia Queen. And on his ratings, Galaxy Star was second only to Winx. I think we've got another second only to Winx, better horse now in the winner, but the three-year-old. And that Arcadia Queen, on his analysis, was second only to the Autumn Sun. So what we saw yesterday was a reinforcement of that, especially from Arcadia Queen, and how appetizing are these horses now, these megastars from Perth and also that Tiako Shark in New Zealand.
Yep.
Like all these big races that have been put on, these ones that New South Wales have announced in the All-Star Mile, they are going to be heavily dependent on these glamour horses from Perth and this glamour horse from New Zealand. And
we've got to get some of them here. We've just got to, because it's just the same horses running against each other, and Winx has just been beating up on them.
They need to find a way to convince Bob Peters to be less conservative and to bring these two megastars over here, because they are the X factor now. They're the exciting element to whatever can happen in the East in the, between sort of January and April, aren't they, really? So,
and Sydney will be trying hard, obviously, with the Golden Eagle. I mean, that's a $7.5 million race for four-year-olds. I mean, who's going to beat her?
Well, the other thing too, from a breeding point of view, she's already a Group 1 winner, so I suppose that box has been ticked, and Bob Peters is a smart businessman. The prize money's probably too much to refuse, given that it's a race restricted to four-year-olds if he can get her there. But from his point of view, it's more about Black Type, and he's supporting that side of racing that's getting more Black Type victories, more Group 1 victories, and then breeding as he goes forward.
It's funny though, isn't it? Like, everyone says, oh, he's very insular and he's reluctant to bring them over. He's been bringing horses over here since Congressman. So he's, you know, if he's got the right horse, he's going to travel. And I just think we've been waiting for the next potential megastar to come along. And I think we've got almost two in the two Peters fillies and mares over there. And I just think they are so important. And Tiako Shark, we can't produce a danger to Winx here, but there's dangers to Winx looming elsewhere. So I just think, if she can take it on the road, Warren, do you think, I think she's the most exciting horse in Australia, given that we know what Winx can do. You know?
Yeah, you probably want to see them get out of that WA bubble, but we have seen, as you said, Bob Peters bring the right horse over for many years, and they've measured up, and a number of them have run really well. So you want to see her get out of that zone, and she is exciting. She's running sectionals, and she got the weight advantage yesterday. But she's certainly, for me, one of the most exciting horses in the country.
Absolutely. Speaking of, I mentioned Tiako Shark. I don't know when he's going around again next, but there was a big race in New Zealand yesterday, the Ridges Wellington Captain Cook Stakes at Trentham. You're our New Zealand expert, Warren. That's a significant race, obviously, at Trentham yesterday. It was won by Dan's Dance, which is a lovely name to get your head around. And it won really, really impressively over a mile. And that was, it's going to head up to 2,000 metres, I think, in the Livermore Classic. So, you know, and just reading the story, they seem to think that Dan's Dance is very, very good. And then Tiako Shark also. So did you get any feel for the talk of their good horses when you were over there?
Mainly that
there's
a high opinion of Tiako Shark. You couldn't talk to racing people without coming across the shark. And I'd love to see him progress on to perhaps some races. Maybe the first thing that he could target might be a Sydney Autumn.
We've seen Dan's Dan's dance in Australia, so he's exposed here. Yeah, and Opie Boston riding the winner yesterday. He's just a class act in New Zealand. You talk about Willie Pike in WA and some of these jockeys that just dominate their own backyard. Opie Boston, he's just a class above over there.
Terrific days racing right around Australia and New Zealand. The Acadia Queen, the Kingston Town, the Group 1 victory, probably the highlight. But a terrific day's racing at racing.com, Park Pakenham.
This podcast is brought to you by rsn.net.au.
Trent Langscale referencing the barrier draw on RSN 927 and live from Zinc at Fed Square. I think we'll have Daniel Harford and Mickey Felgate out there, and I'm sure if you're in the area, pop past and say good day to the boys. An OB tomorrow morning from Fed Square. But let's get your thoughts yesterday, Trent, on a run of the day and a horse to follow.
Run of the day for me. I've already mentioned this. The answer, my friend, given everything against him and the expected improvement we'll see from him. I thought he was outstanding winning the last. And the horse to follow, Can't Split Starfall. He's got a lot of upside, the winner of the first. And Manolo Blahnik, I think, can be winning next start.
Matty Stewart, how did you see it?
I'm going to find one that was hard to find. Its name was Arcadia Queen, and she won a race at Ascot. And I think she, if she can take it on the road, she's the most exciting horse we've seen for a while. So good luck to her.
Yeah, she's certainly the run of the day for me. And I like the run of Manolo Blahnik also, Trent, but I'll for a point of difference, I'll make Civil Disobedience my horse to follow. I thought he chased well and he'll be fitter with that run under the belt. That's our wrap of racing around Australia yesterday.
This podcast was brought to you by rsn.net.au.